from the book of Joshua. Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel together at Shechem. Then he called the elders, leaders, judges, and scribes of Israel, and they presented themselves before God. Then Joshua said to all the people, "If you will not serve the Lord, choose today whom you wish to serve, whether the gods that your ancestors served beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are now living. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." The people answered, "We have no intention of deserting the Lord and serving other gods. Was it not the Lord our God who brought us out and our enemies and our ancestors out of the land of Egypt, a house of slavery, who worked those great wonders before our eyes and preserved us all along the way we travelled and among all the peoples through whom we journeyed? We too will serve the Lord, for he is our God." And the reader from reading from the letter of St. Paul to the Ephesians, "Give way to one another in obedience to Christ. Wives should regard their husbands as they regard the Lord, since as Christ is head of the church and saves the whole body, so is a husband the head of his wife. And as the church submits to Christ, so should wives to their husbands in everything. Husbands should love their wives just as Christ loved the church and sacrificed himself for her to make her holy. He made her clean by washing her in water with a form of words, so that when he took her to himself, she would be glorious with no speck or wrinkle or anything like that, but holy and faultless. In the same way, husbands must love their wives as they love their own bodies. For a man to love his wife is for him to love himself. A man never hates his own body, but he feeds it and looks after it. And that is the way Christ treats the church, because it is his body, and we are its living parts. For this reason, a man must leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two will become one body. This mystery has many implications, but I am saying it applies to Christ and the church." And now, reading from the Gospel according to John. "After hearing his doctrine, many of the followers of Jesus said, 'This is intolerable language. How could anyone accept it?' Jesus was aware that his followers were complaining about it and said, 'Does this upset you? What if you should see the Son of Man ascend where he was before? It is the Spirit that gives life. The flesh has nothing to offer. The words I have spoken to you are spirit and they are life. But there are some of you who do not believe.' For Jesus knew from the outset those who did not believe and who it was that would betray him. He went on, 'This is why I told you that no one could come to me unless the Father allows him.' After this, many of his disciples left him and stopped going with him. Then Jesus said to the 12, 'What about you? Do you want to go away too?' Simon Peter answered, 'Lord, who shall we go to? You have a message of eternal life, and we believe. We know that you are the Holy One of God.'" As the title for our homily says, there is a time for talking and there is a time for decision. We can talk all we like, but we can't cover everything that needs to be said or should be said. And our talk can't make our decisions for us, and they can't make others decide as well. In the end, we have to consider what we know, interpret our experience as best we can, and then decide what we are going to do. And as we know only too well, our well-meaning decisions can be pretty fragile. In our first reading for this Sunday, Joshua, in the book, has delivered two lengthy sermons to the people in chapters 23 and the 24, all about the good things that God has done for them and the importance of remaining loyal to God. But Joshua cannot secure their loyalty. They have to be free to make the commitment. And in our reading, they do just that. But one doesn't have to read too far beyond the book of Joshua to see just how fragile such professions of loyalty can be, for all the talk behind them. It is testimony to Israel's honesty that they did not conceal these failures. When we turn to today's gospel passage from John, it brings the story of the loaves and fish and Jesus' long dialogue with the Jews about the bread of life to a close. There's been a lot of talk, and it's now decision time. And Jesus challenges his listeners, and us as readers of the gospel, to make their decision for or against him, even though he knew from the outset those who did not believe and who it was that would betray him. Now one might ask, if Jesus knew beforehand who would not accept his teaching, then why bother preaching to them? Two responses to this come to mind. One is that Jesus' knowledge does not presumably impinge on their freedom to decide one way or the other. As God, Jesus knows, but does not coerce. Rather, he weeps over those who will reject him. A second response is that perhaps it's easier to get our heads around, is that the message of truth needs to be spoken even to those who reject it. After all, to avoid doing so would be a dereliction of Jesus' mission and of his obedience to the Father's will. And God's will is that all be saved, and there is always the hope that down the track, those who reject the truth may be moved to hear it again and accept it. As decision time looms, Peter, on behalf of the 12, makes a heroic decision to stay with Jesus in the face of rejection and departure by, as the passage says, many of his disciples. It is a crucial profession of faith in John's Gospel, a parallel to the great profession of faith by Peter in Matthew chapter 16. But, like its synoptic parallel, it does not guarantee the disciples' lasting loyalty. They remain flighty, fragile disciples. Now, where might we find an example or a model in which right and even courageous decisions are crucial for a relationship? A model of the kind of discipleship that remains loyal throughout all the highs and lows of human experience. I think the answer is provided from the letter to the Ephesians, which invites us to consider married life. Such is the importance of married loyalty in the eyes of the author of the letter, that it becomes a visible sign, almost a sacramental sign, of the relationship between Christ and the church. Married life is a relationship of loyalty and loyal decisions that has to be lived out day by day. Now, two things can be said about this passage, I think, and its use of the husband-wife relationship to describe the relationship between Christ and the church. One is that although the metaphor of marriage is a powerful one and has a long biblical pedigree stretching right back to the 8th century prophet Hosea, it is, like all metaphors, even inspired ones, limited. After all, the masculine imagery is associated with God in an active leading role, while feminine imagery is associated with Israel in a more passive receptive role. This metaphor, powerful though it is, needs to be balanced by other biblical images of the relationship between Christ and the church. For example, brothers and sisters of Jesus, sons and daughters of God, or Luke's church as the people of God. The second point is that despite these limitations, the text still provides a powerful challenge. Although our modern understanding of the way the relationship between husband and wife, between man and woman, is to be lived out, may have changed significantly, the principle on which the author of this letter bases his reflections is as valid as ever. As it says, give way to one another in obedience to Christ. This principle calls for the constant sacrifice of oneself for the Christian welfare of the other, however one enacts this in different cultures and times. The decision times are always there. In living this way, we are doing as Jesus does, and we are also doing it to Jesus. After all, as he says in Matthew 25, verse 40, insofar as you did it to one of the least of these brothers or sisters of mine, you did it to me.